take two Wednesdays to cover. So I think I have enough material. I'm pretty sure I do. So watch me just go through all of it. But that's where I depend on you guys for comments. So, but before we get started, let's go to God in prayer. Our Father in heaven, we're so thankful for another day of life, and we're grateful for this church that we can be a part of. We're thankful for the church as a whole that Jesus Christ died for, that he shed his blood for. We're so thankful that we can be a part of that saved body. And we're thankful at this time, Father, that we can gather together as a local group and to study from your word together. Father, your word brings us so much great things, and we're so thankful for it. We see truly how much you love us because you've simply revealed your word to us and the great redemptive plan through Jesus Christ. We're thankful for this chapter that we get to study, Hebrews chapter 11. It means so much to us because it strengthens our faith to see those who have gone on before us and left a good example. Although they sinned, although they failed, they still were faithful unto you because you were faithful unto them. Father, please bless us as we study about Abraham and Sarah. And may we learn great things from the things that they have done and how they glorified you in their lives through their faith. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. All right, so let's turn to Hebrews chapter 11. The passages that I will cover for just tonight will be verses 8 through 12. So I'm probably thinking next Wednesday we'll get to verses 13 through 19. But we'll just read Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 12 at this time. It says, "By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore." So if you're in the Sunday auditorium class, there's going to be some overlap. We're studying Genesis there, but that's okay. Repetition is the key to mastery, and so it's a good thing to be, you know, hammered with certain stories that we're familiar with. So we're going to spend the majority of our time in Genesis. So if you will, go ahead and turn to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 11 ends with Abram and Sarah before their name changes. And they're without a child. It mentions the fact that that Sarah is barren and they're without a child. And they're living in Haran at that time. Chapter 12 and through the end of the book, chapter 50, deals with the time of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so chapter 12 kicks that age off, the time of the patriarchs, as we see here with Abram, who will soon have his name changed to Abraham. The way I looked at it in our passage in Hebrews chapter 11, I saw verse 8 comparable to chapter 12 here in Genesis. So just kind of keep that in mind as we're going through Genesis and we're going back and forth to Hebrews. I think Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8 goes well with Genesis chapter 12. So we'll start with verses 1 through 3. Jay, if you don't mind reading verses 1 through 3 for us.
"Now the Lord said to Abram, 'Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed.'"
So here begins the story of God redeeming man through his son, Jesus Christ, the Messiah who would come. This is the answer to the problem of sin. We see here the promises that are being made to Abraham. Obviously, this was mentioned in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15 with the seed being mentioned. But we're really starting to see these promises really come to light as we look through the book of Genesis. About 400 years after the flood is what we have here. And the flood was mentioned in chapter 9, chapter 10. But about 400 years after the flood, God makes Abram to be the founder of a nation in which this seed, Jesus, would come. And so we're familiar with the three promises. We teach that to our kids. We learned it as kids. The land, nation, seed. These are the promises that were going to be made to Abram, and they would be fulfilled. And this would obviously be a test of his patience, a test of faith, not only for Abram, but also for the whole nation of Israel. Because as we know, with God's promises, they're done in his time. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But they're done in his time. They're not done in our time. Patience will definitely test our faith, if we have it or not. So this last promise, the blessing to all nations through Jesus Christ, through a Messiah, through a Savior, that's the foundation of the rest of the Bible. We have Galatians chapter 3 and verse 16. I don't think I had that up there, did I? Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. It says, now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He does not say in two seeds, as of many, but as of one, and to your seed, who is Christ. So again, this is through one seed, through Jesus Christ, but this would come through a multitude of people. And God talks about, you know, the multitude and how they could even be numbered when it comes to the sand of the seashore, or the stars in the sky. But it would come through one seed, and that seed would be Jesus Christ. So Jesus is that blessing. He's the greatest blessing the world has ever had. And so this is, this is a very foundational point for the Jews at this point to see these promises being made to Abraham. We also see that these promises were repeated to Isaac. Genesis chapter 26, and then to Isaac, and then to Jacob in Genesis chapter 28. We won't go there, but we're familiar that those promises are repeated to them as well. All right, any comments on verses 1 through 3 before we go any further? All right, verses 4 through 5.
So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. When they came to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh, at the time the Canaanites were in the land.
Okay, so Abram leaves his home in Haran. If I had a laser pointer, I'd point up there to it, but you see it's up north. But he's called out of Ur of the Chaldees. You see where he's at there in the Babylonian area. Kind of have it numbered so that hopefully that you can see that and hopefully that helps you. But that area, does anybody know what that area is known for, what it's called, what it's termed, when you're talking about where his traveling path from Ur to Haran and into Canaan? Yes, the Fertile Crescent, that's right. There's a reason God put him on that path. And why is that? Yeah, it's not fertile, that's right. So even something like that, something as simple as seeing the path that God takes Abraham on, you see that God is taking care of his people. He's taking care of Abraham. These promises go along with the comfort, the peace, the hope, but the providential care that God gives to his people. So something as simple as a route, we can see God working in that. So he leaves from Ur of the Chaldees, travels northwest to Haran, and travels southwest to the land of Canaan. So he's going to an unknown land. This is obviously a place that he has never been. Again, another test of his faith. Because we don't see anything mentioned of Abraham complaining or hesitant, I think that's indicative of the fact that he had a strong faith in God and his promises, and that he was going to do exactly what God told him to do. We see a very strong faith on Abram's part and those who are with him. It seems like they just make this long journey, and I mean a long journey. They make a very long journey without any complaining. And they're walking by faith, literally walking by faith. This was a familiar place to him, obviously, his homeland. And to go to a land that he's never been before, it showed the type of character that Abraham had. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. And does anybody remember how old he was when Isaac was born? 100. So 25 years, right? Again, this happens in God's own time. You know, your promise that you're going to have a child, that you're going to be the father of nations, I mean, of multitudes of people, and yet, you know, you're approaching 100 and you still don't have that child. But we'll talk more about that as we go through the story. So they travel about 400 miles from Haran to get to the region of Canaan. And they persevere through this long trip. They're not discouraged, it seems like, and they go straight to where God's leading them. Obviously, what's the application for us?
We have to walk by faith.
And we have a long journey, do we not? Yeah. We're not traveling necessarily a path that Abraham's traveling, but spiritually, we're on a journey. And it's a long journey. It really is. Aren't we thankful we don't live as long as 969 years like somebody did? You know, I'm thankful that our days are numbered, and it's still a long journey. So God has numbered our days, but we're expected to walk by faith every step of the way and not be discouraged by life's troubles. Persevere. And guess what? We're going to a place that we've never been. Although that is our home, we've never been there. And just like with Abraham, he'd never been to this place, never been to this promised land of Canaan. But he goes and he walks by faith. All right, any comments before we get into verses 6 through 9? All right, go ahead, Jay.
Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh, at the time the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he moved to the hill country on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on, still going toward the Negev.
Okay. So I'll go back to the map. We see that he comes to the city of Shechem in the land of Canaan. I have to squint my eyes to see where I'm looking at. All right, so number 3. You see that number 3, red 3. You see where Shechem is. That's where he's at right here in verse 6. Back here, there we go. God said that he would give him this land. He's letting him behold it. He's letting him put his own eyes on it. He would give him this land to dwell in just like he promised. So what does Abram do in response to that? Builds an altar. Yeah, worships. I mean, what do we usually do on, not us, but what's usually done on an altar? Yeah, sacrifices. Sometimes they're made for memorials, but he's worshiping, he's sacrificing. He is having a proper response to what God is rewarding him with. And that's by the grace of God that he's getting this reward, this promised land. This is not something that Abram earned, but it was accounted to him for righteousness. And we'll talk more about that later. But this is something that he does to show reverence, to show respect to God for those promises that he's making. And it says a lot about the type of person he was to show this type of response. We should be appreciative of the way Abram responded. So then he travels about 20 miles south to Bethel. I'll go back. About 20 miles south to Bethel. I don't think I have it on that map. No, I don't. So at this point, that's where he's at. And they set up a tent there at one of the highest points there in Canaan. And then what does he do there? Yeah, repeat, builds an altar there for God. That's a statement of faith. Generally, when you build an altar, you don't tear it right down, you leave it there. And so that's a statement of faith to people among whom he had come to live with, that this man seems a little bit different. If there's anyone that's encountering him, this man seems a little bit different here. I think the application is wherever you go, take God with you. Whatever foreign land you're at, take God with you. Be around God. Make sure that you pay homage to him, you serve him, wherever you go in your journeys in your life.
I think we should also think of him. That building an altar was not a five-day job. There was a lot of work involved.
Yeah.
Sometimes we find it hard to get up and come to a building once, twice, three times a week. Abram was devoted to serving God. Whether he got anything else done or not, everywhere he stopped, he built an altar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. And it also took time to perform the worship on the altar as well. Yeah. I would picture Abram as someone that he's the one doing that work too. That he's not asking servants to do that for him. Because otherwise, it's not really much of a sacrifice that he's making when he's getting someone else to do it. So that's my idea of that as well. So he journeys again south through Canaan, and we see that they knew during this time, they knew that they were travelers. They knew they were pilgrims, sojourners. That goes along with Hebrews 11, verses 13 through 16. I know we didn't read it tonight. We will next week, but it goes perfectly with those four verses. We are travelers. We have an eternal home awaiting us. This is definitely not our home, nor should we want this to be our home, frankly. This is God's creation. It is wonderful. He has made it wonderful. All His works are wonderful. But this isn't the place that He created for us to always want to be at. We should always be longing and searching for an eternal rest, an eternal abode, and do so by faith. All right, any comments before we get into verse 10? All right. 10 through 20, please.
Now there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. When he's about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Say, you are my sister, and may it go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake. When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, he dealt well with Abram. And he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had.
All right, so Abram travels south from Bethel to Egypt, having to do that because of famine in the area. He planned on staying in Egypt until the famine was over. But while he was in Egypt, he got himself into a little trouble. Almost think he might have created the trouble himself. He deceived Pharaoh. He encouraged his wife to lie or tell a half-truth. So what do we see about Abram here during this time while he's in Egypt? What's revealed about his character here? A moment of weakness, right? Yeah. This was a test of his faith. This was something that no doubt God saw coming when that famine came in the land and they went to Egypt. This was definitely a test of his faith. But there's one thing that not just this account of Abram doing this in Egypt, that there's another thing about Abram similar to this that strikes me, like, why did this happen again? Y'all remember this happening again? Yes, yes. King Abimelech, we won't turn there, but in chapter 20, verses 1 through 13, he does the same thing later to King Abimelech. But honestly, brethren, it's hard for us to point a finger when we repeat same mistakes. I mean, how many of us have ever sinned one particular sin once and been done with it? I mean, it's a struggle, right? I mean, whether it's lying, you know, cheating, whether it's thinking bad thoughts, it's difficult. And so that is a test of our faith as well. But we see here that this is a real encounter that Abram was dealing with, and this was a weakness of his. So what was he afraid of? Yeah. And should he have been? Because why? What has not yet been fulfilled? That's right. Yeah, God's promises have not been fulfilled yet. So we can easily say, you shouldn't have done that, Abram. But truth be told, we are weak just as Abram was. And it's good for us to see stories like this, is it not? You know, the Bible is not made up of perfect accounts of people here. We see flawed people, sinful people. We learn from their mistakes. And not only that, but brethren, we should learn from each other's mistakes. And we should gather strength from that. And what should that do ultimately to our faith? It should strengthen our faith. Jonathan? Absolutely. So the lesson learned is when you come to a point in your life where you sin and you just do so just so terribly like this, what's your response? You know, are you just going to just give up? Are you going to be like Judas and just say, there's no way that I can make a turn back to the Lord? He won't accept me. I'm just so caught up in sorrow that the only answer I have is giving up. Or do you turn from that? Do you say, all right, this is a test of my faith. How strong is my faith? What am I going to do with this? We talked about that with David and Bathsheba. I mean, David could have easily just folded it, you know, and just said, I am unworthy, I'm awful, and just gave up. But David, he had some earthly consequences to deal with, but nonetheless, he strengthened his faith, and he got better. And that's what happens to us a lot of times when we fall like that. We can use those moments to strengthen our faith and become stronger from it. And that's what the Lord would want us to do. Ms. Rita.
I find it interesting in that he's a typical man in this. He treasures his wife. What does a man treasure when he's married and has his home, his wife, his child? And that's where he's challenged. And that's where he's weak.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Those aspects.
Yeah.
Like
that's right. That's right. He'll take care of you. He'll take care of your family. Just trust in him and have faith in him. You know, I just said a while ago that he repeats the same mistake later with King Abimelech. Do we see something similar in the family tree happen later? Isaac, Rebekah. That's in chapter 26 of Genesis. He does the same thing. I don't know. And this is not for this Bible class period, but I don't know if, you know, Isaac heard about this story and was kind of an influence. It was always in the back of his mind, Dad did this twice, you know, here's my chance, what do I do? Well, I guess I'll do the same thing to avoid the situation, but it is interesting to see Abram do it twice and then Isaac do it later with in chapter 26. But you know what? We fear when there should be no reason for fear, really. Jesus had every reason to fear the multitude. I mean, if we were in that situation, we would be struck with fear. We would be debilitated with fear. And that's what fear does. Fear can just conquer your faith. It can beat it down. But if we can overcome fear, it will go away. It will flee from us just like the devil will when we resist him. But fear can definitely cripple our faith. So the question is, when fear comes up, we should ask ourselves, why are we afraid? What is the big deal? And then if we put things in perspective, hopefully our faith, if it's strong enough, it will overcome that and say, you know what? There's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to fear. God's my rock. He's my provider. And I will trust in him. And just let things happen the way they should happen. All who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. We're not here to avoid persecution. Persecution can help strengthen our faith. It can help it grow. But if we flee from it, it will definitely weaken our faith. If we're afraid, if we're scared, that fear can cripple our faith. All right, any comments on chapter 12?
One thing.
Okay.
With Abraham, we can speculate maybe, and it could have been that God was putting him to the test here. We don't know that, and neither did Abraham. And Abraham came up with this on his own. Sometimes we go to places, we enter into situations where we maybe have had some kind of warning, and maybe there's some reason for that, for us to feel similar to what Abraham felt here. But we're not told that. As far as I know here, Abraham came up with that on his own. Mm-hmm. But that possibility, they may take him or they may take Sarah and put him to death. Pharaoh may have done that. He had the power. We don't know. But I look at that sort of, that's some of Abraham's imagination, that he didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
He was taking precautions. But he didn't know. And we often react just the way Abraham reacted. We look at possibilities and we think, well, what if this, what if that? That's just on us. That's not something that we have any particular reason feeling that way.
Yeah. And we'll talk about this next week. We'll... You know, Abram kind of turns that what-if game around with offering his son Isaac. Okay, so if I do kill him, what's his logic there? That's right. So we can play that what-if game, but let's do it on the positive side. But we'll talk more about that next week. All right, chapter 13. Was there anybody else? Okay. And the wonderful thing about the situation where you explain how a man grows from his mistakes, becomes stronger in his faith, we don't have a God that remembers all those times of weak faith. He's forgotten those things. And we should too. So we grow from it, we move on, and we forget about the past. And we press on. All right, in chapter 13... we won't read the verses 1 through 4, kind of go through this just real quick. So Abram leaves Egypt with his family and his possessions. In a sense, he's almost kicked out. Pharaoh wants him gone. We can talk, I'll leave that to the Sunday Genesis class, but just one thing that always comes to my mind that strikes me is, you know, we as Christians, we should have the proper influence on the world. You know, we should be the ones that hold up the standard of Christ, of truth. But when someone of the world has to correct us for something that we're doing, you know, shame on us. So Pharaoh is basically calling Abram out on this. Pharaoh's a worldly person. He doesn't regard God. He doesn't regard Jehovah. But he's calling him out and said, how can you do such a thing like this? Even someone like Pharaoh understands that this is not right. You shouldn't have done this. So, yeah, Pharaoh wants him gone. So Abram leaves Egypt with his family and his possessions. And then they went to the previous location between Bethel and Ai that we read in chapter 12 and verse 8 to the place of the altar that he had built. In chapter 13, verses 5 through 13, we won't read that either. But we see in this account, Lot was still with Abram, and he grew rich also. You know, Lot was with him from the beginning. So their families grow rich, their herds grow rich, they just more possessions, their herdsmen become at odds. We see that in 26 verses 17 through 22. And then Lot chooses the land. You know, he gives them the option. Do I have those verses wrong? Those don't look right. I think I do. Well, don't pay attention to that. But anyway, you know the story. And then he chooses the land of Sodom, Lot does, and it's an exceedingly wicked and sinful place. All right, now let's read verses 14 through 18.
The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, "Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring can also be counted. Arise, walk through the length and the breadth of the land, for I will give it to you." So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord.
All right, so we have Abram and basically in the middle of Canaan. God calls to him again and shows him in every direction this place was meant for him and his descendants. Lets him see it with his own eyes. And then he also talks about how those who will inhabit this land, that they'll be so numerous that they will be as the dust of the earth. That's hard to imagine, isn't it? Something that innumerable. And again, this is further encouragement, further strength to the faith for Abram that God is providing for him. You know, God is there to strengthen his faith, and he's doing so with these promises and showing him this land. And those of his seed, that they should not, you know, they shouldn't worry, they shouldn't fear man, because God's going to give them this land. And there's people there. It's not a land just, you know, with no inhabitants. There are people there. He will give them this land. He'll give it into their hands. So God here, he encourages Abram to travel the length and the width of the land and to gather strength from seeing what all he has given to him and his children's children. I put these verses in here. I want us to turn to them. When it talks about that he wants them to travel the length and the width of the land, I think about these New Testament verses that are somewhat similar. And this might be a stretch, but I wanted to include them. Ephesians chapter 3, verses 17 through 19 says that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you being rooted and grounded in love may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the width and length and depth and height, to know the love of Christ, which passes knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. I just love that expression here. You know, just the magnitude of the love of God. And, you know, seeing that, the magnitude of the love of God and the promises that he's offering him with this land, I see in the same sense. Travel that land, the length and the width. Well, we can see the depth and the riches of God's love, as mentioned there in Ephesians chapter 3. And then also in Revelation chapter 21, we'll turn there real quick. Revelation 21, verses 10 through 17. This is talking about the New Jerusalem. "And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Also, she had a great and high wall with 12 gates and 12 angels at the gates, and names written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. Now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And he who talked with me had a gold reed to measure the city, its gates, and its walls. The city is laid out as a square. Its length is as great as its breadth, and he measured the city with the reed, 12,000 furlongs. Its length, breadth, and height are equal. And he measured its wall, 144 cubits, according to the measure of man, that is of an angel." So again, that might be a stretch, but I just can't help but think of, when I read this in Genesis chapter 13, I can't help but think of those verses that just talk about the depth of not only heaven, as we see there in Revelation 21, but the depth of God's love fulfilled through his promises. So he moves on toward Hebron, and yet again, he builds an altar. This is obviously a habit of his. Builds an altar there to the Lord for worship, and Hebron becomes a dwelling place for him, and that's eventually where he buries Sarah in that land. We'll see that later on. So this is the third time we see Abram building an altar to the Lord for sacrifice, and it wouldn't be the last. Especially the one that we're going to talk about next week in Genesis 22, because he's going to have to build an altar. He's going to have to prepare and build that altar for when he offers up his son Isaac. All right, any comments before we get into chapter 15? Yes, Mr. Dave. And it takes work. We got to develop that love, you know.
It
yeah, absolutely. Mark? That's right. That's right. Daniel, go ahead and make your comment. We'll stop there.
So my thought of this is our ministry, right? A lot of times we've all had things in our life we put together. Maybe it's just put together a little kid's toy. But it says, you know, step number six, you're going to need a hammer to put these two pieces together. They're very firmly tight, right? And so you get to put those two pieces together and it just like slips over each other. And you're like, I don't know if I did this just right.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Very good. All right, so we'll pick up with chapter 15 of Genesis next Wednesday, Lord willing. Thank you for your comments.